January 21st for Hindsight 2020, debriefing the last 3 years. A day of special programming looking back at the Trump regime, what happened, why, and the repercussions domestically and internationally. We'll focus on national policy, foreign policy, privacy and surveillance, policing, immigration, labor rights, confronting white nationalism, the environment, and much more. Again, that's Hindsight 2020. Debriefing the last 3 years on Tuesday, January 21st from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday at 4:30 p.m.
And war! Fredonia's gone to war. Each native son will grab a gun and run away to war.
Left, we're going to.
At last the country's gone to war.
It is the country's going to war.
At last the country's going to war.
We're going to war.
This is a fact we can't.
All right.
We're not going to war.
We're not going to war.
No.
Well, maybe
it
we're
appears,
going to war.
It appears
we might
we're
go
not.
To war. We could go to war.
Doesn't look like it right now.
Well,
I say right now.
Right, this second,
like
you mean. Well, for 5 years, 4 years, Trump has planned to kill this guy, you know.
For 4 years?
4 years, it turns out.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Planning to kill the guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to become president so I can kill this guy.
No. Just 4 years planning to kill somebody.
Yeah, see, but that predates his term in office.
I know. So. I know.
Oh, okay.
But it's true.
Huh.
This is a very weird time. You know, it's
Is that a technical term? Is that term of art?
Like weird?
It's weird.
It's weird. It's scary. This is KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187. I really don't know how to scare people enough.
Well, is that our job?
It is our job.
To scare people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would disagree with that.
What would you say?
Well, I don't think we should take our airtime talking about what our job is. We should just do it.
Scare people?
No.
What?
No, provide incisive analysis of current events.
Oh.
And properly incisive. Contextualize them in a broader historical context.
Oh, that in other, sounds to make, so intellectual.
We're supposed to make sense of things for people. We're not supposed to scare people.
No. Scaring people is, well, first of all, I agree.
All right.
We need to explain why we should scare people.
No. Okay.
Yes, sir. You should be scared.
Yeah, you should, but that, it's not our job to... Okay, I digress. All right, so last week we talked about how we were at the very brink of going to war with Iran, or so it appeared.
So it would appear.
So it appeared.
Well, it would appear.
The president, of course, ordered the assassination of General Soleimani, a high-ranking member of
which
of
I
Iranian
say
has military.
Been... I'm saying that the powers that be had planned it for years. And you point out, hey, Trump wasn't even president.
Right. He wasn't even president.
Okay.
So Soleimani was assassinated, a problematic act in and of itself, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that
and
today.
There was another assassination attempted but failed in the south of the Arabian Peninsula.
Well, that I haven't heard about.
That's true.
Okay. So it appeared that we were heading towards imminent military conflict with Iran. Iran retaliated, I guess, giving what it believed to be a proportionate response.
Yeah, and it turns out that these were not missiles without explosives. It turns out they actually did serious damage.
They did. They launched missiles against a United States airbase within Iraq. But apparently let the United States know that the attack was coming so the soldiers could take shelter. There were no casualties on the American side. It was essentially an attempt by the Iranians to save face. Which they did, and also gave Trump an on-ramp from the march to war, which he appears to have taken So the net effect is that everybody seems to have stepped back from the precipice for the time being.
For the time being.
Yes.
But then, see, the intervening variable here was the insane shooting down of an airplane.
Yes, the very same day.
Yes.
As a missile strike in Iran.
Big mistake. Horrible mistake.
Yeah, those of you listening to the show, of course, are careful citizens, informed citizens. You know about all this already. So we're just sort of setting the table now. For our discussion.
Is that what we're doing?
That's what we're doing.
I'm glad to have it
clear. We're not scaring people. We're setting tables.
Should we bring the soup spoons?
Whatever you like, Joe. Whatever you like. So the Iranians apparently inadvertently shot down a Ukrainian passenger jet that had been taking off from Tehran Airport.
With lots of Canadians, lots of Iranians.
With lots of Iranians, lots of Canadians, lots of Ukrainians.
Yeah.
Shot down. Everyone on board was lost.
I wouldn't say lost. I would say dreadfully killed.
Okay.
Imagine
sure.
the but terror yeah, but, as you fall.
Yeah. But you're trying to scare people. I'm not. So there's
I believe that people should be scared.
I believe they should. Yeah. But I just disagree that it's our job to scare them.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. I know. But again, we're getting off track.
Of course.
So now, this reversed what had been a remarkable achievement by Trump, which was this, by assassinating Soleimani. Trump managed not only to unite an internally divided Iranian populace against the United States. He also managed to turn the Iraqi government against the United States, which then voted to expel American troops.
They're not going.
No, they're not going. So Trump managed to pull this incredible feat off with one bold stroke, leaving... Yeah, it boggled the mind, really.
Well, it does. You know, what boggles my mind is that there is about a third, somewhere around that, of the potential voters in this country who actually think this guy is cool. And, I mean, he's so stupid.
Yeah, he is. And that is indeed a problem. It's a huge problem.
How can this be? How can ordinary intelligent people, and even perhaps not so intelligent people, think this guy is cool when he's so stupid?
Yeah. So, Then the shooting down of the airplane happened.
Well, intervening variable,
yeah. So now what had appeared for a very brief time to be an internally unified Iranian populace is now once again...
Pissed off.
Demonstrations all over the country against the Iranian government. People quite rightfully angry that the military posturing with the United States was undoubtedly a factor in the downing of this aircraft.
Yeah.
The Iranian military was on, hair trigger warning at that point. So it was very easily for somebody to make a very stupid and catastrophic mistake, which somebody obviously did, and shot down that airplane. So now things are perhaps in an even more chaotic situation than they were when this all began.
Well, and if the United States is any kind of model of behavior of nation states these days, one of the things the Iranian government is going to have to be anxious to maybe do is to posture itself or even actually go to war because of the incredible, incredible anger of its own people.
Yeah.
I mean, this is while it's, they pulled away, it's also, they're going to need to do something.
Yeah, I guess that remains to be seen.
Well, of course it remains to be seen.
I mean, they did something.
Because it hasn't happened yet.
Right, like I mentioned the face-saving retaliatory strike against the American airbase.
Which we were told, essentially, that these were like empty missiles. They were not.
No, they were not.
They were within 3 feet of the exact targets.
Yeah.
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, they hit where they were supposed to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. No American casualties, thankfully. I think that
because
they
told us ahead of time.
They told us ahead of time. So that was really. Now we can have a discussion about the innate insanity of military exchanges between countries. Period. But within that context, this was probably the least damaging step that Iran could have taken, and they did it intentionally.
Yeah, it was very measured.
It was very measured, indeed. Yeah. And as I mentioned before, gave Trump an opening to take a step or two back from the brink of open warfare. Well, so, an improvement of sorts.
Of sorts. I mean, there are so many things to touch upon in all of this.
Yep.
Tonight, there's going to be a debate.
tonight there's going to be a debate. And really, we haven't really waded in, into the waters of the Democratic presidential primary, have we?
But I think it's not enough because it's too awful.
Well, I don't know that it's too awful. There is,
oh, it's awful.
There is a caucus in a couple of weeks, so it is upon us. So I think...
you mean Iowa?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So I think we're going to be talking about it more and more.
Well, I think we have to, but I think the Democrats are the archetype of shoot yourself in the foot politics.
They are. Yeah.
And here is a president who is a fascist, mm-hmm. Who supports neo-Nazis, a racist, a sexist, a rapist. I mean, we can make a list of the terrible things he is. And again, I have to say, yet there is something like 30% of the voting population that think he's really cool.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
It is astonishing. Right.
So, but before we jump into that and before we jump into the rest of the conversation today, I want to lay out a little more context.
Please.
Sure. Set the table to continue our previous
Keep me rational.
Right.
keep working at it.
Yeah, that's a bridge too far, Joe.
Keep working at it.
All right. So all of this happened, of course, in the context of Trump's pending impeachment trial.
No, let's be clear. He's been impeached.
I said his impeachment trial.
Oh, you mean the trial to kick him out?
Yeah, that's why I used the word trial.
I see.
Yeah, has been impeached by the House. The articles of impeachment are going to be handed off any day now.
Pelosi's clever maneuver of not giving them too early has probably forced the Republicans to actually have, imagine this, a trial with witnesses.
Maybe.
And paper,
documents. We'll see. At the very least, it's forced the public to be cognizant of the fact that if they had their way, they would go forward with no trial at all. They would simply vote to dismiss.
Right.
Which is, I think, constitutionally dubious. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but what the Constitution says, you've got to have a trial.
I play one on the radio.
Yeah. Constitution says if a president is impeached, then there must be a trial. So it would seem to me to be sketchy, at the very least, for the Senate to simply vote to dismiss charges.
True that. Yeah.
But that's what McConnell wants to do. And he's already come out and said publicly that he's coordinating with the White House on how this trial is to unfold. So
can you imagine?
A trial in which the jury sits down with the defendant to talk about how things are going to go.
It's awe-inspiring.
No, that's not what it inspires.
Awe is the equivalent of fear.
Yeah, I suppose. Right.
Yeah, in the biblical sense.
We are trying to scare people, right? Right.
No, we're not trying to scare people.
You said it was our job to scare people.
Well, I lie.
Repeatedly, you said that.
I lie repeatedly.
We're 10 minutes into the show. You said it several times.
The fact of the matter is, I'm just saying what's going on.
Okay? Thanks
Good.
For that.
I'm glad we're clear right. on that.
So there,
people are calling
yes,
us.
Yes, they are. So there's big contextual piece number one, the impeachment and the pending trial.
But that's not all.
That's not all. Big contextual piece number two, Trump's coming under increasing fire for having ordered the assassination of Soleimani, which is, as I mentioned before, a dubious act on a number of levels. The first of which is that it is accepted policy around the world that we don't simply assassinate foreign political figures.
Particularly if we're not at war with them.
Particularly, yes, because we realize the inherent corrosiveness that brings to the international political scene. How can one govern if the assassination of one's political leaders is always an imminent possibility?
It's kind of like bad days in Latin America after the CIA messed up Chile.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. So people, nation states do not assassinate leaders of other nation states. That's just not something that's done.
Well,
now,
it happens.
It's not official policy.
No.
Right? Okay. So Trump's coming under fire because of that, and also because he has claimed repeatedly that the reason that Soleimani was attacked and killed is that there were multiple imminent attacks coming from the Iranians on several American embassies around the world.
Imminent.
Now, imminent meaning it's coming. There's nothing you can do. It's coming, right?
Right.
All right. This turns out not to be the case. The administration has produced no evidence whatsoever to support this claim.
Because it can't.
Because there is no evidence to support this claim. There was a briefing held with ranking members of Congress after the assassination, after which, shockingly, Senator Mike Lee, I don't know if you saw this video.
Oh, I saw that video.
Senator Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, came out and absolutely trashed the briefing, said it was the worst that he had experienced in his all of his time in Congress.
Well, he's been there a while.
It was insulting to the Constitution and to the American people, and that it was a sham on absolutely every level. Now, this is an ardent supporter of President Trump up to this point.
Right.
Right. So the president's coming under question for this, for many reasons, not the least of which is the extent to which it resembles the rhetoric that preceded the war in Iraq some 15 or so years ago.
Under the Bushes.
Under the Bushes, yeah.
Who lied and lied and lied.
Lied and lied and lied. Okay, right. So that's big piece of context number two. The third, of course, is that there is a presidential campaign getting into full swing.
Yeah, and I'm torn here because I'm very disappointed in the way in which the Democrats are conducting this so-called debate. Because I believe that all of them should, before they start arguing with each other about nonsense, it really is mm-hmm. nonsense, before they start arguing about nonsense, like what kind of a healthcare system should be developed to deliver to everybody. That's,
really? I think that's pretty far from nonsense.
It doesn't make any sense because the power will never be in the hands of the president alone. It makes sense to say this is the ideal, but we will settle for anything that gives everybody health care. But that's not even my point. My point is that all of them should start their rap, as it were, with a statement that the main purpose of this election is to get this guy, this fascist, out of office.
Yeah.
Every one of them should do that.
And that's how we get President Biden.
Well... That's
let's go to the phones.
Yeah, I better do that.
John, save us, please. Good morning.
How do you do, folks? Well, I've got a little different take on this, talking about political assassinations. We're not at war with Iran, but the question is was Soleimani at war with us? And in other words, his activities all over the Middle Eastern region. He was the head of Quds Force, right?
Yeah.
And they're in Lebanon, they're in Syria, they are in Yemen, and he was conducting operations against the United States. I mean, wait a minute.
The United States is a country, right? It has borders. I really want you to understand this because it's important. The United States is everywhere except in America in this context. He does indeed attack American forces, but this is our American imperialist advancement. It's not the United States.
Well,
come on.
Yes. Well, but that's not the point I'm trying to make is that. Do you remember World War II when the assassination of Heydrich?
No, I can't. I was not born
there. Well, let me tell you about that. Heydrich was the man who actually was the creator of the Final Solution. He was also the goleteer of Czechoslovakia. Winston Churchill sent in a team of Czechoslovaks who were parachuted in and carried out his assassination.
Mm, didn't work, though, did it? I mean, it did work. No,
they
he got killed, but it didn't stop the murder of the Jewish people.
Well, he was a primary mover of that, and then the Germans proceeded to kill all the people in the village where this occurred.
Well, yeah.
All I'm trying to tell you is that if you think that that assassination is not a proper tool. Now, you can argue that we are not at war with Iran.
Well, wait. I made a point. Maybe it was missed here. It didn't stop the murder of 6 or more million people, did it?
Well, it stopped him. that's the point. And the question is whether the people, now, for example, had we been able to take out Hitler, it might have stopped things.
Been able to take out Hitler? Had we shot Mussolini? Come on.
What?
You're talking about alternative histories that never indeed happened.
Well, no, but people didn't have the tools to do it at that point.
What do you mean?
I'm saying there was no way in World War II that we could have probably killed, although that we probably could have killed Hitler or Mussolini individually.
Okay.
We did.
All right, look, I'm going to let you go because it's a if then there could have been not thing that didn't happen.
503-231-8187 is the number
to call.
I'm
getting impatient with this.
I know you are.
If then.
Yeah,
then.
I know. I could tell.
Magical.
I know.
Magical thinking.
This
no
is,
use at all.
This is the Abe and Joe. That's our new tagline. The Abe and Joe Show. No use at all.
No. Magical thinking. Okay. No use at all.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also write to us, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or you can tweet at HonestAbe72. As the online promo for our show reads this week, things are weird. Things are really
is
weird.
Is that what you put down?
I
there?
Did, actually. See, it is a term of art.
Yeah, I guess it's, yep. I guess the technical term for what's happening is weird, but I would say the technical term beyond weird is beyond weird.
Okay.
Because,
all right, I'll tell you.
Meanwhile, there are these people, including the Vice President of the United States and the Secretary of the State,
uh-huh.
are believers in the rapture. Now, this is not a non sequitur because it really governs the way they think. They want to see end time. They believe in a literal interpretation of the last book of the Christian Bible, and they believe that there's going to be all kind of magical weird stuff, and we're all going to, all the good people are going to float up in corporate, that is in their bodies, into heaven. Wow.
Yeah, crazy.
Well, not just crazy. Wow.
No, crazy. But I digress. Okay. I keep hearing someone clearing their throat. Do we have a caller with us? George, good morning.
Good morning. You mentioned context, and I've saved this letter from former Attorney General Ramsey Clark to the New York Times. And both of you have probably read this letter and are familiar with it for years. Clark wrote this letter to the Times, and it was published January 21st, 1995. And the title of the letter was Sanctions on Iraq Take Toll on Children. And he mentioned that already a study showed that, and this is 1995, that National Security Council measures had caused the death of about 500,000 infants and children in Iraq before the war started. Well, isn't something like that mass murder, and isn't that an act of war? And I just want to leave it at that. The letter is probably still online. It's and you guys know about this, and you're right on the, you're absolutely right on it when you talk about context. And this is one of the most important things that doesn't get mentioned. So I want to get away from taking time here and just want to listen. So I'll hang up and best wishes.
Well, thank you. No, I'm glad you brought that up. We tend to be a little bit short on historical context because we're doing this show now.
Uh-huh.
And things now are really weird.
Yeah, I thought one of the strengths of our show, though, was historical context.
Well, that's just because I was a historian for a living.
Right. And I'm just, what, here, flapping
you're
my
just,
gums?
Why are you here? You're here to keep me, Matt, rational.
Oh, I see.
No, you're the voice of reason, and I'm the crazy guy.
And we're in
that's
much,
the parts we play,
we're,
right?
We're in much more trouble than I thought we were. That's
Gee, and what if all this was just pretense?
Anyway, go on.
All right. I don't want to get us into trouble. I just want to remind people that while I may sound hysterical, I'm not. I am very, very concerned with the craziness of all of the people who are in charge right now. And I'm very disappointed with the Democrats because, as is so common with them, they can take an obvious situation and mess it up. And I'm hoping tonight's debate will not be like that. But again, the way you debate this issue, who should be president, each of the candidates should show with rational discourse why they are the one who can defeat Trump. And the way you do that is you begin by saying, I'm here right now running for president because I think the most important thing we have to do is get rid of this Nazi. Oh, let's not call him a Nazi. Call him a fascist.
All right, so we're not going to address the question of sanctions. The
no, we will. We will. All
right.
It's all in good time.
Okay. All right, continue.
All right, no, that's enough of that. We got people calling us. No way. And you want to
see,
talk.
But now we got two things now. Two things hanging out there. First, the caller mentioned sanctions and how they, from some points of view, can constitute an act of war.
Well, I believe sanctions are, in fact, an act of war.
It is true that when one nation imposes sanctions on another, particularly when there's a considerable power imbalance like there is between the United States and Iran, that the impact of those sanctions fall disproportionately on the poorest and most vulnerable people in the targeted nation.
Right. Well, just as speaking of sanctions, the domestic sanctions that Trump is advocating and carrying out as much as he can are falling disproportionately on Americans who are poor, often who are people of color.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, you know, it's a parallel.
Now, what I said is broadly true. It's also true that in certain situations, much more targeted sanctions can have a significant effect on the actual people we want them to have an effect on. I'm talking specifically in this context about the plutocrats, the oligarchs in Russia, whose assets have been targeted by United States sanctions. And the removal of which, of said sanctions, is one of the prime movers in Putin's foreign policy right now. Remember several weeks ago when we talked about the very odd effort going on in Eastern Europe where literally people like Rudy Giuliani and his cronies were trying to get the Ukrainian government not only to smear Joe Biden, but to retroactively say that it was not the Russians who spied on and hacked the American election in 2016, but the Ukrainians. Do you remember all of this?
Yes.
All of this was for the expressed intent of bringing about a set of conditions under which the sanctions that have been applied on Russian oligarchs no longer apply.
Well,
so all of this was about undoing the sanctions on Russia.
Well, not all of this, because I think the Russians have even bigger goals.
Indeed, but that was a big part.
And I think right now yesterday the papers were just publishing the fact that in fact the Russian trolls from the government itself have gotten into that corporation, the energy corporation, I forgot the name.
Burisma.
Yes, Burisma. And people are talking about how they're snooping around in the files and they got in there. And I think they're going to plant false information that'll suddenly come out as if it were real. I think that's their real plan.
Okay.
So they can smear Biden because they think Biden Certainly. Is the candidate.
All right. Now, I want to get to your other point that you said just now, that the most important thing right now is getting rid of Donald Trump, and that each of the Democratic candidates should come out with rational statements as to why they're the best person to get rid of Donald Trump.
Yes.
It's very important to get rid of Donald Trump. However, it's not sufficient. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient to our moment. If we go with someone, a nominee, based purely on whom we think has the best mathematical chance of beating Donald Trump in an election, that person is probably Joe Biden. I'm telling you right now that Joe Biden is not up to the challenge that the world faces at this moment. Yes, maybe he will have succeeded in defeating Donald Trump, but is he up? Is he the guy to enact meaningful climate policy? No, he is not. Is he the guy to address rampant income inequality? No, he is not. Is he the guy to reestablish rational and beneficial labor policy? No, he is not. He fails on all of these tests. The only thing
he's
in his
good
favor,
for the banks. He's good for the banks.
He's good for the banks. The only thing argument in his favor right now is that yes, he probably could beat Donald Trump in a general election. And apparently, Donald Trump thinks so as well. Otherwise, he would not have asked the president of Ukraine to smear the guy.
You know.
But having said all of this, I'm telling you right now that Joe Biden is not the choice that we want.
We, you and I, or the, we as a people.
Not the best choice for the American people.
No, I agree with you. I mean, there are two candidates who have a clear progressive agenda. Now they're fighting with each other, which is sort of silly.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, I like the lady.
Oh, okay.
Because the other guy's too old. He's my age. You don't want me being president of the United States. You know
no,
what I'm saying?
No, this is true. We don't.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't vote Joe. In 2020. Should we go back to the phones?
Don't vote either, Joe. Okay.
David is next. Good morning.
Oh, greetings from San Francisco.
Hey, hello. Great.
Yeah, hey, a couple of different things. You had one of the, a couple of calls back, the fellow that was trying to talk about Nazis. If he was to look up 1957, some documents came out that showed that Hitler was actually in league with the King of England, King Edward VIII.
The one who abdicated.
Yeah, and he was
for weird sexual reasons. Oh, go ahead.
Well, he was allowed to abdicate you know, for the woman he loved, because they figured out that he was in league with Hitler, and he was given state secrets to help bring down England, and he was hoping to become. You remember the Kaiser was the king of Germany, and he had to abdicate after the end of World War One. And he was, the monarchies were terrified.
Just out of curiosity, why are we talking about the Second World War?
Well, because Trump is in league with another king, this, you know, Mr. Bonesaw of Saudi Arabia, and or a monarchy. I don't even like to call him a prince or a king, because these guys are...
Well, they come on. They're princes and kings, and they cut people up and send their bones and flesh elsewhere.
Well, in the big picture... There were two reasons why Trump had to do this assassination, and they had to do with the Friday news dump just before the assassination. Well, the first one was Deutsche Bank documents came out that showed that Trump had been doing money laundering with a Russian bank secretly through Deutsche Bank, and so there was collusion with Russia.
Okay.
And that for 3 years we've been hearing this, that there was no collusion, no collusion. There was collusion, and that came out on Friday. The second thing that came out on Friday was that the quid pro quo, he did the quid pro quo. There were emails from Trump staffers that showed that he ordered the quid pro quo.
Yes.
So the
By the way, folks, quid pro quo just means this for that.
Right, yeah, but the Ukrainian, in other words, Trump was selling out the Ukraine. He was refusing to give them weapons while they were being attacked. That the U.S. Congress had authorized, both sides of the aisles, Republican and Democrats, had voted $400 million to give, you know, bazookas, let's say, to the Ukraine so they could protect themselves against Russia attack. And Trump held off paying that for 2.5 months, so that they lost more. They lost a couple of thousand more people in that 2.5 months, and so Trump was actually selling out the Ukraine for the benefit of Putin. And so Trump had basically committed treason, you know, in acts of subverting a nation's defense.
Well, beyond treason, he simply disobeyed the law. We don't even have to get into the theoreticals here. It was a clear case of violation of American law.
Yeah, but and this gets in, there's a third angle, too. And you look at Soleimani, the general that got killed.
Yeah.
He was not only on a peace mission, but he was also the strongest fighter against ISIS. ISIS was getting whipped because of Soleimani's directions. There were two different, you know, Trump sold out the Kurds, who were a strong opposition against ISIS, mm-hmm. and Trump then sold out Soleimani by when he figured out that he was on a peace mission to Iraq. He used that targeted information to kill him. And so it gets into who is ISIS. ISIS is is a private army in the creation of the Saudis. And the Saudis were trying to run a pipeline across Syria. Syria didn't want to allow it. And so the Saudis came up with a private army, ISIS, to justify.
Well, I'm not. Wait.
Yeah, this doesn't jive with my understanding.
But
even so,
it's really off of the thing. Now, I appreciate that you may have information. You may have information that we don't know. That's easy to have. But it's irrelevant right now. Really. We need to focus in on what's going on today.
Let's thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
No, it was interesting. I'll do a little research and maybe get back on that.
All right. John is up next. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, 231-8187.
Go ahead.
Speaking of San Francisco, I called in to a talk show. I forget the call letters of the... It's a radio station that does a lot of call-in. And John Rothman is a very good radio host, but this was probably March after Trump was elected. He was trying to ask the callers, how did Trump get elected? He was naming some reasons, and I called in to say, well, one of the reasons is the purged voters. And he said, oh, yeah, I had Greg Palast on the radio 2 weeks ago.
Great guy. Good research.
Okay, my question is, and there's so many other stories that we could get into, but don't have time. Why do the American people, the media, and the Democratic leaders fail to talk about big stories that should have been talked about? I'll mention one more: the Supreme Court Gorsuch, who ruled against the truck driver who was trying to save his life. You know, that was never delved into by NPR or anybody except on KBOO. And there's so many stories that we willfully deny and won't talk about.
Well, that's always true. But also, I just want to, you know, say Gorsuch the grabber. I just wanted to get that out there.
Right.
Sorry.
Anyway, wouldn't we have a little different world if we were talking about the things that, you know, are obvious to talk about? Like the purged voters that allowed Trump to get in?
Well, I think it's an important issue, and I think it's good that you brought it up, because that is what's happening. It's happening in this election as well, and that is part of the strategy of the Trumpist part of the Republican Party. I still say part of the Republican Party, because I honestly believe that with this trial in the Senate, we're going to see some righteous behavior by Republicans.
And thank you for the call. I think the big question that you asked in that call, basically, why, what aren't we talking about and why? That's one of the most important questions you can ask as a citizen in a free society.
Absolutely.
And that underscores the importance of news organizations like KBOO and programs like Democracy Now! It's really important that these perspectives find their way out there. It would be better if they found their way out there on a larger scale, but...
Yeah,
important
the closest,
nonetheless.
The closest we've got is MSNBC, I have to say.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
You
don't listen to
No, I think MSNBC, I think, has some valuable things to say and offers a perspective that you might not find in other mainstream news outlets. And I think it's safe to call them a mainstream news outlet at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
But should they be your only source of information? Absolutely not.
Well, of course not. Okay. And I think that, I'm just a big Rachel Maddow fan, I have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that she has a great research staff. And I do think that what they're doing, while not perfect and sometimes totally missing the point, is better than anything else on the large scale media. I mean, let's face it, we're small scale.
It's true, we are. You just said Gorsuch the grabber. I think you maybe meant Kavanaugh the grabber.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You're
well,
right.
You know, hey,
I get confused. They're
all Supreme Court justices. They're all the same,
you know,
right?
They're all not all the same, but the whole way in which we're now bringing people into the Supreme Court, ever since the
we're not bringing them in.
Them in. We really, 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 really have a degeneration of a process.
Yes. All right, coming up this morning on KBOL at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear from Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone on monetizing anger. Taibbi is an award-winning journalist, and as I mentioned, a contributing editor for Rolling Stone. He's author of Griftopia and Hate Incorporated.
Oh, he's great.
Yep, smart guy. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein features an extended interview with frontline peacemaker and organizer Kathy Kelly.
Also great.
At 11 is Stage and Studio with Dime Roberts. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galaban interviews Alexis Day about her new show of tapestries at Elizabeth Leach Gallery now through March the 1st. All this and more coming up on your listener-supported radio station, KBOO. And don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play.
You can even hear us.
You can. Yep.
Why? I don't know. But.
Yep. I know of a few people out there who have communicated with me and said that they get our show
at
as a
more
podcast,
convenient time.
As a podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's
so
cool.
It's out there.
So.
Let's go to the phones.
All right. 231-8187. Is it Brian?
It is.
Yeah. Hi.
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 I am only calling to remind people that, and hopefully I'm not too far afield what you've been talking about, but to listen to the last couple of days of the Democracy Now! Show and listen to Lawrence Wilkerson's interview, Lawrence Wilkerson, the chief of staff for Colin Powell. Mm-hmm. And I often have this voice in my head that says, well, you know, I believe in all this peace stuff, but, you know, if we really got down and were able to speak honestly with the real players in it, they'd show us how we're, you know, we don't know all the facts, and that we don't know everything we need to know why we go into these wars and such. And so he came out, he was the chief of staff of Colin Powell, and he just laid it all out, and he basically tell it's a big war machine, and it's all about making money off a bunch of killing people. And it was really fascinating, and I advise everybody to go back and listen to Lawrence Wilkerson's interviews. It's really great.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. It is really great, and one of the things that really is great is the show is, you know, the constant reminding and research that shows exactly how capitalism works in the United States at this time in history. I'm the guy who keeps saying, as do many of these other people, that this is late stage capitalism, and that it inevitably drives through the process of money and other things into a fascist situation. We are seeing the actual reality of that happening now with the Trump administration. And it has an unholy alliance, which is ironic, with some very, very strange Christians who believe in the literal corporate movement of all the good people up into heaven. And I keep thinking they must be wearing, you know, angel garb, and I want to look up their skirts. I don't know. It's so weird. It's so weird.
Did you Wilkerson laid that out too about Pence and Pompeo, say they're end of days guys, they want to bring about these.
He laid
it all out very clearly for everyone to hear. And then you know, you're talking about the things that Amy Goodman Show's bringing out. The other day she also had the whistleblowers from Cambridge Analytica, and speaking of late stage capitalism, they told exactly how they got pulled into this organization thinking they could do good things, but slowly got pulled into this crazy note of what's his name, Trump's advisor. I'm just having a brain fart, but Trump's advisor started introducing them to these European right-wing political parties and stuff, and they got sucked into it, and they broke free, obviously, but they said they kept with it because they were constantly told, hey, this is going to turn into a $1 billion business, you know, and they wanted to be part of that. And it just totally pulled them away from their ideals and their values, and they found themselves in the midst of right wing whack jobs.
Yeah, the you know, there's a problem with talking about right wing whack jobs in that we tend to therefore be dismissive of their power and their impact. Yeah, they're wrong, and yeah, they're kind of crazy, like I'm making fun of the rapturists and so on. But the fact of the matter is their politics, their behavior, the way they operate, and their influence is real. It's very real. So even though it is, to me, very, very odd to think of the corporate movement of the people, not even their souls, the people going up to a heaven, the idea of heaven itself being really weird. Even though that's all weird, the fact of the matter is that if enough people believe in it and are willing to behave based on that belief, we have a very serious problem.
Yeah, it's just the same thing as jihadists. It's all the same. It's just fundamental.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good analogy, actually.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah.
I have to take a breath here.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, stop breathing, please, during the show.
Well, would you do CPR for me?
I would.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that would be really dramatic radio, wouldn't it?
That would be, but except it would be kind of...
Right, well, I mean, these crashing noises and...
Yeah, people ignoring the radio part of the radio, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, we talked this... the question of what to do when you have believers in end times Christianity occupying influential government posts, what do you do about that?
They certainly have a right to their religion.
They certainly do have a right to their religion, but you know, they have to, when they're in conducting the duties of their job, have to leave their religion at home, as it were. Right? There is a clear separation between church and state in our country.
The whole set of their beliefs says they can't leave their religion.
Right. Then they should recuse themselves from public office, if that is the case. If you can't leave your religion behind, then you should not hold public office. Now, it says in the Constitution that there shall be no religious test for public office. That means two things, right? That means you can't have a test that says we're not going to let you be elected unless you're a Christian, for example.
Or something else.
Right. And it also means that that you should – it goes the other way as well, that we – you shall not be elected if you can't leave your religion behind. So we have freedom to practice religion in this country, and we have freedom
but there's
from
no,
religion
but
in
but
this country.
But at the same time, it also says there shall be no religious test.
Right.
So, you know.
Right. That's why I was just talking about that.
Yeah, but yeah. That's a paradox there.
Yeah, there is a paradox.
That means that Pence, mm-hmm. who apparently cannot be alone with any woman.
Well, apparently not.
Other than his wife.
Yeah, talk about failing a religious test.
Well, woo. Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. If you can, if you're somebody who believes deeply in your faith to the point that you cannot exercise your duties as a public official in the absence of that faith or without bringing that faith to bear, then you should not hold public office. Period.
I agree. But
okay.
But you know, there's always been in all of my lifetime, at least, an assumption that we, my father. Of blessed memory, I like to say that, you know, said, this is a Christian nation and don't you forget it. Just like that.
Uh-huh.
And he was making a point as a Jewish man of not particularly religious character, knowing the enormous amount of anti-Semitism that dwells within the American heart.
Saying this is a Christian nation, so be careful. So
well,
watch
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, 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 really.
Yeah, and that's probably an astute warning, I would say.
Oh, hey, somebody called us.
Let's go to Mark. Good morning.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning, folks. First thing I'd like to do is just thank you for all the years of great talk radio.
Thank you.
And informative talk radio. One thing I'd like to hear more of, or a problem I have with the current set of news, which is going on for years all over the place, is I know how bad things are. I may not know details, and every week there's new lies and new bad things, but I kind of feel isolated and helpless. I would love to be able to connect in with my community and find ways to be active and proactive and reactive and help make some changes that we desperately need in this country, and I'm not sure how to do that, and I guess I'm asking or begging you and the rest of KBOO to cover some more of the things that are going on in the community.
I think that's
that we can connect up with.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. You know, part of the unfortunate duty that we have is to tell you what's going on that ain't so good. However, there is a lot of good stuff going on, and in fact, you know, I look at the new younger members of Congress with great hope and great thought. There are people now, ranging from people in California all the way over to New York, persons of color and not, who are challenging the established assumptions of the so-called liberal media and liberal society and liberal behavior. We are breaking away from the alliance that characterized politics through the Kennedy era and into modern times. And I think it's very hopeful. Fortunately, I think our job in this program is to sound the alarm. So we don't always cover the positive things. But I think it's a good criticism. I think that we all need to understand that real good, interesting stuff is going on. And I have actually more hope than I pretend.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think the AOC movement, hopefully it turns into a big movement, is important.
AOC.
AOC. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I'm glad you said it.
What I like to do after, you know, getting up and having my morning coffee or however you want to, you know, read that, is say, where can I go today to make Portland a better place or to help change things so we don't have another 4 years of Trump? Something I can do as an activist.
Let me start with one simple thing you can do. You with your telephone, call every human being you know or vaguely know or even have no knowledge of and tell them that the thing they need to do in this election is vote. because it will be decided. It really will be decided by all those people who last time, unfortunately, sat on their hands rather than voting.
All right.
Start with that. Start with that. It's very simple and tedious, but very important.
Well, after I call both of my friends, what do I do next?
Well, you have them call their friends. You make a telephone tree, man.
Hey, thank you very much for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
No, I'm serious. You know, it sounds silly, but the fact of the matter is, it is what Obama built in 08 was a parallel organization to the Democratic Party. He did not rely on the Democratic Party. And he built an organization, and I got this from the horse's mouth, that paralleled and was part of the Democratic Party, but it did the work of getting the vote out, particularly in minority communities.
You're talking about Obama for America.
Yeah.
His campaign, essentially.
And I was, I don't usually do this, I was drawn into it to the extent that I actually went door-to-door myself.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Interesting.
And I'm lazy and cynical, so I don't generally do that. I think at this point that one of the biggest problems that we're going to be facing is the way in which the Democratic Party, an establishment party, carries on in this climate. They act as if this is not the emergency that it really is. It's beyond the usual politics, way beyond it. This is a very scary time, and we have a very scary fascist in the White House. And that calls for extreme efforts and extreme participation of the American people. First of all, they got to be alarmed and aware and activated. Second of all, we all have to say that whatever goes on, even, God forgive me, Joe Biden, we have got to defeat this clown, this fascist clown, because if he gets another 4 years, I don't know.
Fortunately, I think that that virtually anybody in this field of Democratic contenders could beat Donald Trump in a general election.
I'm not sure.
I think they can.
Well, a lot of them could.
Provided they run the right sort of campaign and they try, they avoid some of the mistakes that Secretary Clinton made last time around.
Well, I think that's true. But already they're not saying every one of them, we got to defeat this clown.
Though they are saying that, every one of them.
Are they?
Yeah. In fact, yes. They've said that explicitly. In debates and in print and on the trail.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, everybody is basically making that argument because it's an easier argument to make than getting into policy specifics.
Well, and then that brings up another oddity. How can it be that 30% of the American people like this? I mean, is it some kind of, is it a combination of fear of people of color, fear of women? I mean, what makes this reactionary population do what they do?
So the answer is yes, fear of people of color and fear of women. Exactly.
Okay.
There's a couple demographic inevitabilities and realities that we can't overlook here. The first of which is that only two demographic groups, and I've mentioned this on this show before, two demographic groups gave majority support to Donald Trump in 2016. Only two. You know who they were?
No.
White men, white women.
Actually, I said no, not knowing. Yeah. I knew the answer.
Right. And the other demographic inevitability that we cannot overlook is in the not too distant future. We're going to see the moment at which white people cease to be a numerical majority in this country. There is a great deal of fear that has been inculcated into the reactionary base of the Republican Party, which is overwhelmingly white, of this moment. What happens to this country when we no longer exist in a state of perpetual privilege? What happens to us then?
Well,
that is an existential fear.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
Now, that has been much has been made about the existential economic fear of blue-collar white voters in places like Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, and so forth. But I think that really elides the larger question, which is the ingrained racism that is present in that section of the electorate. This is the same racism that has run through this body politic since before the United States was founded. So when you talk about economic dislocation and anxiety, yes, that's one thing. But the deeper problem is white people fearing that they're no longer going to be on top
and
will be punished for everything that's happened.
And I would add fear of women, too. I mean,
yeah.
It's part
yeah,
of the
it is a patriarchy,
thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And the patriarchies are inherently scared of women.
Okay, let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Johnny, you're on the air.
Hi. Just wanted to, what you said earlier, Joe, about the candidates coming on the platform to profess what we need to do to defeat this, you know, the current administration holder, which I can't say his name. I would wish that they would get together and marshal their strengths instead of sniping at each other. That's the part that's just turned me off about these debates is, you know.
Well, that's just calling them debates and structuring them the way they do makes this virtually inevitable. Each of them has their own ambitions as well as a larger interest in changing things for the better. And we are caught in this dilemma every time, every 4 years, particularly in the Democratic Party.
Well, to me, the most important thing is they all have really good ideas. I'm sorry Cory Booker stepped back because he didn't jump into the money game. He has some great ideas, and those ideas and need to be pulled together. They're all needed, you know. We don't need to be fracturing apart, and that's the part I fear is that we're not going to coalesce the Democratic group together. I don't see a third party situation, so I'm going to vote for the strongest Democrat that comes out of this. I support a lot of the platforms of all of them, what they've said, but some of them more than the others. I don't want to get into names.
Okay, thank you very much. I mean, I think your point is really a good one. Let's go to Annalisa.
Good morning.
Good morning. Money, of course, the money part is the most important thing that has to come out of these debates, because just like the gentleman said, Cory Booker now has pulled out. But I know who can defeat Trump, though. There are three people.
Who's that?
And I wish we would pay more, well, I do, but I wish people would pay more attention to Andrew Yang. He is to me, when you see his open, honest face, that we have to pay attention to him far more. And then, so Andrew Yang, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren, the ones remaining, are able to defeat Trump. But that is not the most important thing. We have to listen what they have to really say outside of the propaganda in the commercial news outlets.
Yeah, you know, I agree that what you're saying, I'm not particularly the three candidates you've chosen, but I agree that what you're saying in the larger context is correct. I want to get as many people in as possible. Let's go out to Mika. Is it Mika?
It's Micah.
Micah. Sorry, Micah.
Hello. Hey. Yeah, actually, Bernie Sanders is leading the polls in California, which is a lot of the votes.
Yeah.
And Connecticut. And now they're saying he's even leading in Iowa, the first state. So he is a leading contender. You need to stop mentioning Joe Biden. He's not what we want. And don't even mention his name. You need to just mention the other candidates more. And Bernie Sanders, they never mention this.
Listen, we're going to be talking about the campaign. If we need to mention someone, we will.
Yeah, but he's not the leading candidate. Actually,
okay.
And MSNBC and CNN have distorted it by never mentioning Bernie Sanders as much as they can. They try to not even talk about him because he's not for the 1%, and they are the 1%.
Now, there, I think you're making a really good point. Bernie's numbers, you're right, especially over the last few weeks, have entered into that front runner territory, and he has not received coverage commensurate with a front-running candidate. You're right about that.
No, that's true. I don't think it's particularly one network or whatever. I think it is a tendency to disallow a social Democrat from being the president of the United States. And that would include Warren, by the way.
Yeah, totally. Her as well. And that's the problem with the Democratic Party is it's sold out to big money interests. So you have to push back against that as much as possible, because the number one issue really is climate change. If we don't get somebody in there that's going to take climate change seriously, we're totally doomed. Runaway climate change is here. No.
I agree with that.
It's even in the mainstream press now. The National Geographic in September 2019 went into full depth about the melting of the permafrost.
Yeah.
And it's vast, and it's already happening. And the mainstream media is still ignoring it. Although the other night I did see on CNN, the host actually said that we need a paradigm shift.
Yeah, you know,
I have to
cut you off,
yeah,
not because we disagree with you, but because we're out of time. And we want to thank you all. We want to urge you to stay tuned to KBOL. We want to remind you that we do really good news programming as well as incredibly great music. So you give us money and you listen to us and you stick around and it'll always be possibly better.
We'll see you next time.
Disorder from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, we hear from Matt Taibbi on monetizing anger. Taibbi is an award-winning journalist and contributing editor for Rolling Stone, and he is the author of Griftopia and Hate Incorporated.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid, KBOO board member. Join the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Radio as we pay homage to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's the 35th anniversary of Keep Alive the Dream, Monday, January the 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center. This year, we will be joined by international opera star Angela Brown. And straight from America's Got Talent, Danielle Damon. That's Monday, January 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center at 7600 Northeast Gleason. Or listen live on KBOO Radio or view it on Open Signal Community Television.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The events committee will meet in January on Tuesday, the 21st at 5 p.m.
What we're really doing is we're addicting audiences to a certain kind of experience.